Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 179. In the last lesson, we basically finished the historic portion of the whereabouts of Brother Edom. And I think we gave enough information to make it very plain that history preserved the knowledge of the identity of Esau and where he went, just like history preserved the knowledge of the whereabouts of Jacob and where he went. In other words, the new world, the new lands, beginning first with the new world concept that basically has double meaning, because the new world of Jacob first was the migration from where he was taken into captivity into the new lands that became later on northwestern Europe. And that was a new world. And then after that, later on, a few centuries ago, there was another new world for some of Jacob, in particular Joseph, and after that all the rest of the tribes of Israel. There is a portion of them that migrated along with Jacob into the new Americas, you know, the Canada, north, you know, the northern hemisphere of the Americas, and that is the United States, where you find not only Joseph, not only Ephraim and Manasseh, and you know, we generally think about the United States as Joseph, and in particular Manasseh. But then again, all the tribes of Israel are also heavily represented here. That's every single one of them. And therefore, that became the, you know, the second stage, so to speak, of the new world, before they come back to the next phase of the new world. You know, it's going to be sort of three phases. First one in the land of Canaan, that was the new world after being in Egypt. And after that, in you know, the northwestern Europe, after their time of captivity near that is in the empire of Assyria. And after that, the new world in terms of the United States and all the brethren of Israel, just like they came down to Egypt, so they came down to the Americas to be with Joseph, at least many of them. And then, of course, you find the new world that God is going to build, the new age, and that is when they go back to their land. And it's going to be a new world for them, in essence. They've been away for 2,800 years in terms of the children of Israel, and many of the Jews also never went back. And so you find the new world. But anyway, you have the same thing also with Jacob, with that is Brother Esau. He was there all the time. He never went to Egypt, obviously. He was in the area, the territory, but then he went into his new world in accordance with the blessings and the prophecy and what God had in mind for him. And in order also to fulfill the prophecy that he gave to Jacob through Esau, that is through Isaac, and also to Esau, that the two of them are going to be embraced in a struggle for the dominion, you know, for the birthright, and throughout the entirety of their history. And so whenever one is on top, the other one is the bottom. Sometimes they would live in peace, sometimes they would live at war, and so it's going to be a love-hate relationship, until the end of days when God himself will come and put an end to it and then reconcile both of them. And so the twins now will become both of them brothers, as they should have been all along, and servants of the God of Israel, the God of Abraham and Isaac and Israel. And obviously Esau is the son of Israel, that is the son of Isaac and a grandson of Abraham. And so there would be a closure there to the circle of violence that they had between them and animosity. And between, you know, when you go back, you know, now that we have the historic review of that, I think there is enough information to make it very plain what really happened. We know very well what happened to Israel, but to know very well also what happened to Esau. And that's the only way we can really understand prophecy. There have been a lot of misconceptions there about the identity of Edom. Some thought Edom went to Turkey, and Turkey is Edom, because, you know, they misinterpreted certain things, having no knowledge of the languages of the, in particular, somebody we used to say all the time, Ottoman Empire means Otiman. In other words, that was a son of Edom, Timon, one of his sons. You know, that's a very flimsy explanation to misinformation, you know, very flimsy research into the matter. An awful lot of misinformation, and then forcing and then descending into certain events in terms of the Turkish Empire controlling Palestine, as it used to be called in those days, not realizing any empire that controlled the Middle East had to control that land. And Turkey to this very day never, ever claimed the Turkish people, who to begin with, if you know their history, Turkey is made of actually conglomerate races. There is Armenoid type from Armenia, there you have the Middle Eastern type, some of them would be Edomites, obviously, very few. And the dominant force that is in Turkey are the people that came from Turkestan, the Central Asian people, and they invaded Turkey and enforced and brought the religion with them, their customs, their habits, their culture, and then their language, and imposed it on the land that became known later on as Turkey. But they are not Edomites. They never claimed to this very day, even though they are Muslims, they never laid claim to the land of Israel. They never fought against Israel. On the contrary, they had always, generally speaking, a very warm relationship with the people of Israel. And they've been generally with allies, even though now, you know, time passed, they did fight with the British. But the reality was that Turkey generally was in the sphere of the Western Hemisphere, and influence and relationship, and they have very close relationship to Israel today, modern Israel. And they never claimed, you know, the land belongs to them. You never see it from them. You never hear it from them. And when Brother Edom in Spain persecuted Judah and also persecuted Israel, you know, when they were in charge, when they were on top, when they were merged, at least to a degree, with the Habsburgs, and they had the Spanish Habsburgs, they imposed Inquisition not only on Brother Judah that was in their midst, but also on many of the nations of Israel. And we have a lot of historic records of the wars that they had and the afflictions and the oppression that they imposed on many Israelite nations, and also on the fact of the knowledge that was there in Israel, that is in the nations of Israel, and be it Holland or France or British, whatever it may be, you know, the constant conflicts that they had between them, and many of them who knew their ancestry as being Israelites, realize that they are being persecuted by Brother Esau. In particular, as some called it, Amalek. And as I mentioned earlier, there is a plaque that you can still find to this very day in a city, I believe, called Urn, U-R-N, in Holland. Well, that plaque is still on display to this very day in one of the buildings there. I don't have the quote right in front of me. But basically, they make it very plain that they understood that Amalek, it's trying to destroy Israel, realizing that they are Israel and Amalek is of Esau. But in another case, you know, if you want to review a little bit what we covered so far, now that we know where Esau is and where they went, and then when you go back to the scriptures that we read before that, you know, you'll have a better understanding of it. And let's go a little bit through that before we continue to have a better picture of that. Jacob and Esau basically had a track of conflicts, sometimes love relationship, in other words, alliances and living in peace together, but oftentimes constant conflicts. Historic records make it very plain that when the children of Israel migrated into Spain, Sfarad in Hebrew, that was given to it by the people of Israel that migrated from Sfarad that was in Lebanon, again another land that was of Esau, and they migrated into Spain, they called it Sfarad also. You know, that was not a coincidence. And the people that ended there, you know, the Israelites that long, long ago came to Spain before they migrated into the British Isles, they lived side by side with Edom and sometimes had good relationships. And other times they had the usual conflicts. And we have historic records of the children of Israel being persecuted in Spain and finally being forced out by Esau, because apparently that's another land that God gave Esau and not Israel, but Israel went through it, and Esau in essence managed to eject Israel out of his land, and the Israelites that were there migrated toward the British Isles. And yet the conflict continued, and we know that from history, world history, recognized world history of the conflict between Britain, you know, England, and Spain, you know, that culminated several centuries ago, the Spanish Armada that was sent against England with the intent, as some scholars and some historians attest to it, of total destruction of the English people, conquest, imposition of Catholicism on them, and Inquisition, you know, that they were going to impose on them, and who knows what else. Yet God made it very plain he was not interested in that. And so he, in essence, destroyed totally the Spanish Armada, and the Queen Elizabeth at the time recognized at least a little bit of that, that God was in it, and she quoted Moses' song, a statement from there, that he, with the wind, that is a blowing of the wind of his nostrils, you know, he did it, that is God, and they all drowned in the sea. So she's quoting an ancient event that happened in the history of her people, which she knew, being an Israelite, she knew that she, you know, being a daughter of David, and she knew that what happened in the case of Israel coming out of Egypt is exactly what is happening here, and the God that was there delivering Israel was here again delivering Israel from Edom, at this time not from Pharaoh. And so those things were known in history. You put them all together, you begin to understand it, and then obviously after that they went to the New World, and Spain would always be the first, just like they were, you know, being the Phoenicians, that is the red people, the first tribal, and then Jacob comes after them, and Jacob supplants them. If the land was meant for him to be, then God would give it to him, and Esau will go down, and Jacob will go up, even though he was there first. And so you see in the New World, Esau was here first, and ironically, the one that brought at least, you know, the first tribals from Spain to the New World by Columbus. The irony there that Columbus himself was a Jew, a converted, that is his family converted to Catholicism by force, obviously, by persecution. And so when he came on the scene, you know, his father was already Catholic, and as a matter of fact, his family, the Colon family, C-O-L-A-O-N, Colon, a lot of people today named by that with that name, Colon, you know, they may be Catholics, but they're actually Jews, forced into conversion, you know, but rather Esau. And so he was from that family that was forced because of the persecution there to move into Italy. And so he lived in Italy for a while and then came back to Spain, and from there came to the New World. So in essence, it's a twist of irony that a Jew is leading the fleet of the Spanish, brother Esau, into the New World. But Esau, he was here. Esau should have had the dominion at the time. It was understood and was known that the Pope, I can remember his name now, I think Gregory or something like that, he divided, in essence, the world between two powers, and that is Spain and Portugal. And yet, that's not what God decreed. The New World, much of it, at least North America, which is a major part of it, was given to Jacob. And other parts where Spain was, like in the Philippines, Jacob supplanted them there. But in other cases, you see here the same division. Esau on one side of the border and Jacob on the other side of the border, just like it was in the old world, just like it was in Europe, which was a new world for them, and just like it became also in the new world in terms of the Americas. And so in the south, you find a Latin American people, and we're not talking about the Indians that were there, we're talking about the Spaniards that came over there, and though they are the minority, generally speaking, in all those Latin countries, they are the ones who have the dominion in all those countries. And unfortunately, it's been a history of ruthless, cruel oppression and dominion over the natives, that is, Indians. And of course, true to the nature of Esau, wherever he went, he also integrated with the people, at least many of them do. And so you have a mixture there of Spaniards and Indians. And then you still have the pure Spaniards that remain pure, and they're basically European in looks. And you go to all those countries in Latin America, you know, the ruling party, the ruling elite, they're always Spaniards, they're not Indians, and they are basically the descendants of Esau. And all that part of the world, about 20 countries of them, of Latin countries, are dominated by their brother Esau, who still to this very day, you know, consciously, subconsciously, whichever it may be, claim to have the right and the ownership, you know, in many ways, because, you know, they were here first, and then the Pope gave it to them, and so forth, to the New World, to the North also, that is Americas, since at one time they controlled the whole area. And so you see them gradually, in essence, they could not do it by war, so they're doing it by migration. And God allows it, and you know, history tells us, and to this very day we experience that, the conflict between both, you know, love-hate relationship again, you know, they can live in peace together and share many good qualities together, and when they do, things are fine, and when they don't, well, there is bloodshed, unfortunately, and there is animosity and hatred. And so just like in the Middle East, the remnant of Edom there, and Amalek, and others, of course, they claim the land is ours. You know, they're fighting for it. That's their birthright, even though they don't think about it in those terms. Yet, you see the nature of the conflict there. So they do here, too. Those to the south, children of Esau, they say that this land is ours. We conquered it. And we're not talking about the Indians. The Indians don't say that. The Indians, well, you know, we're here. Well, the Indians of South America, they were there. You know, they don't lay any claim to North America. But the Spaniards are the ones that do. Children of Esau. You know, they're the ones that coined the term, you know, those gringos out there, you know, up there in the north. They took everything from us, and we want it back. And in many ways, you know, economically and by migrating over here, and there's always a constant influx that come over here to the better land, you know, to the birthright, so to speak, property that they should have had. And so all these things are going to play in prophecy in the future. You know, if we don't have this knowledge and understanding, we really don't comprehend prophecy properly, and we're not going to comprehend what is going to happen in the future unless we have this information. And yet, God preserved it. And when you read many prophecies in the Bible, and you expand it to all the lands where Jacob and Esau went, you really begin to understand what you're reading. And otherwise, you're in the dark, and you think that you do understand. And then, in the New World, and in the Old World, in terms of the Middle East, in terms of Europe, which was a new world, in terms of the second stage of the new world, you know, the Americas, you basically see the religions there that control these areas, that are prevalent in these areas. And what are these religions? Basically, you find Catholicism, Protestantism, and Judaism, all religions of children of Isaac, you know, children of Abraham. And yeah, you find obviously you find in all of them a certain purity of the knowledge that God gave them, including in Islam. Again, it's another religion. They've got four religions basically there among the children of Isaac. And you find the children of Israel in essence championing, you know, these religions, along with those you know, that are with them and join them from other nations. But in specific, when you look at it, for example, when you come to Revelation, that speaks about Babylon, and Babylon was the land that Edom finally settled in, and that was in essence a part of his birthright that was given to him that people did not understand, where Isaac told Esau, you know, that your land shall be of the dew of heaven, you know, the fatness of the earth. And that's where you find basically not only the breadbasket of the Middle East for many, many centuries in ancient times, and also today it's still a breadbasket, a very fertile land, but more so in modern terms you find the fatness, which in Hebrew, no, fatness and oil are the same word, shemen or mishmane, the word that Isaac used. That's where basically in the land of Esau, and all the oil, you know, when you look at the map of the Middle East and find out exactly where the oil is located there, you see that it is in a very small area, generally speaking. And so the oil that you find in Saudi Arabia was really a part of Iraq. But, you know, the Saudis took control of that area. And all on the other side of the river that is called Shat al-Arab, you know, the river of the Arabs, where the population there is really not Persian, not Iranian, but just like the same people of Iraq, there you find the oil of Iran. But all that is in the same territory. And, you know, this is one reason some people don't understand. Of course, he's got his own problems, Saddam Hussein. But from his point of view, and having a perception, understanding that others, you know, may not have as much, as they should at least understand his motives, what is in the back of his head, of his mind, why is he doing that? Why does he seek, you know, this dominion over the Middle East? And he's, in essence, vying for control of the Middle East, and Egypt on the other side, you know, wants to do the same. But when he seeks, you know, to have dominion over the area, without even fully comprehending, you know, his ancestry, that his brother Esau, that land was given to him, the oil belongs to him, and that was by decree from God. And yet, because of his wickedness, God is not allowing him to have, you know, obviously the dominion, because he's going to abuse it. And in essence, going to hurt brother Jacob very much, if he's in full control of the oil production there. But you can see, even though the oil was there, was his oil, in other words, the oil of Esau, you find brother Jacob is the one that coming over there and exploiting it. And if not for brother Jacob exploiting it and developing it, and being in control of it for quite a while, until Esau had the dominion, basically around the 73 war, that's when Esau began to stretch his muscles and then, in essence, nationalized his own oil, and, you know, jacked up the prices sky high, and changed an awful lot of things in the world economy and many other ways. An awful lot of the money of Jacob began flowing again to brother Esau, that is in that area in the Middle East, and of course others, Ishmael in Saudi Arabia, and then you find the Iranians on the other side. But basically all that was oil that really belonged, according to prophecy and promises from God, to Esau. And then Jacob later on found a way, being the supplanter, and very smart and shrewd and cunning, to turn around things. And even though a lot of his money, you know, began flowing to the Middle East, he began to sell an awful lot of technology and weapons and all kind of things that had to do with industry and whatever is necessary for a modern economy to brother Esau and all the others, and therefore recoup an awful lot of the money that was taken by Esau. But, you know, you can see this relationship. All these things are a part of this struggle between the two. And it's only when you understand that you really begin to comprehend what is happening there and what is going to happen in the future also. Now, in the case of irony that you find here, in the case of Jacob, Jacob went into the new land. So first he had the religion of Israel, and then he went into idolatry, and so he began to include and merge, you know, with Babylonian teachings. And so he's going towards spiritual Babylon, yet God constantly warned him to come out of Babylon. And then you're in Revelation, when Christ is speaking to his followers, he's speaking about Jezebel, you know, that woman that is seducing his people. And think about it, who is Jezebel? Who was the original Jezebel that ruled in Israel? You see, she was an Edomite from Sidon, you know, Lebanon. Well, it was an Edomite territory already at that time. That's the reason why King Ahab married her. You see, she was not a Hamitic woman. She was a white woman that looked just like him, from brother Esau. And if you don't have that background, that you don't understand, how did she get there? Well, they didn't see, children of Israel did marry Edomites, and instead of making them worship the God of Israel, they sometimes worship their gods instead. And that's what happened there with Jezebel. But anyway, Jesus Christ is making mention of that woman symbolically. All the woman in Revelation who is seducing his own people Israel toward her religion. You see? And Edom, unfortunately, forsook the religion of his God, and had taken other religion, and then later on championed, you know, a later religion. And you can see how Satan is always in this picture. And that religion later on became known, you know, by different names. the Universal Church, and then from that came other sects, and others were known as Protestants. And you see so much of Edom behind it, and then you see Israel buying into it and being seduced by that Jezebel, in other words, by, spiritually speaking, a spiritual religion of his brother Esau. And then you see this constant conflict between the two also. And on one hand you find, you know, the part of the children of Israel, Judaism, that is specifically in the sense of Judah, but also many of these precepts and teachings filtered into the children of Israel. First, in its pure form, you know, the religion of God. When we said Judaism, we're not talking about rabbinic. That came later. But the religion of Judah, you know, the time of Isaiah and Ezekiel and, you know, Jeremiah and Ezra and Nehemiah. In other words, the religion of God that remained in Israel, that is in Jerusalem and Judah, while Israel went into idolatry, but still retained good measure also of the religion of Israel and mixed it with paganism. And then you find also what Israel went into as a whole, on the part of Judah, they too injected Babylonian teachings, once they went into Babylon, into the religion of God. And then later on, you know, there was a rabbinic Judaism. And after that, you know, the children of Israel, they went into their own lands in the New World, and they mixed it again with the religion of Israel and the religion of Jezebel. You see, a mixture of both. That's the religion of Babylon. Yeah, that's what God said. This is confusion, both for Judah and for Israel. And then on the other hand, you see brother Jacob, that is brother Esau, is mixing some of the knowledge that he had of the past of his father Isaac, the religion of his father Isaac and Abraham, and his brother Jacob, and is mixing it with other teachings, and that becomes the religion that this Jezebel is representing. And yet also part of Israel is into it again. So you see the conflict there, physically, spiritually, religiously, and, you know, the religion of Jezebel trying to dominate the religion of Israel and taken over. And so only Christ at the end is going to make a difference between the two and expose the false teachings that are in Esau, in Israel, in Judah, and also in the religion that later on came, or called Islam, also championed by Esau and Ishmael also. But the man that championed this religion, that supposedly had a revelation from Gabriel, as it is taught in Islam, Muhammad, he came from an area that was basically the territory of Edom at the time, Medina, Mecca and Medina, and all that territory there that was basically ruled by the children of Edom. That's the reason why that land was called, that is, the sea nearby was called the Red Sea, you know, the Sea of Edom. That's all it meant. And so he was a man of the sword. That's what basically Esau was. A man of the sword. A man of blood. A man that was quick to shed blood. And so he went with that sword to conquer many nations, to force them into religion. You see, that's not the way God was converting people into his religion. But by an example. You know, by walking the right path, and then the whole world sees and they want to follow in like manner. But brother Esau always goes with the sword. And so he conquers by the sword, and his Messiah, and that is his prophet, the religion, you know, that he had, the one at the head of the helm of it, and to this very day, they want also the dominion over the whole earth, not only the Middle East. You know, that's only the beginning. And they've tried several times to conquer part of Israel, and that is in Europe, and reached all over to Spain and many parts of Europe. And then, of course, why was not the intent of God? And so they were repelled from there. But you see, the conflict continues there between the two. And so even when you read in the book of Daniel, chapter 11, about the king of the north and the king of the south, mind you, the king of the north and king of the south are basically of the same people. You see, you know. Alexander the Great had four generals. His kingdom was divided into four. One was in Egypt, and one was in Syria, and one was, you know, in two others in other areas. And one was Greece and Macedonia and all that, and another territory, Turkey and other places. But basically, they were the same people, and they were fighting over power, over the dominion, the preeminence. And so as it continues the story in Daniel until the end of time, it's basically it's going to be the same. When you read about the king of the south and the king of the north, you're talking about basically the same people, in essence. They still have, you know, their ancestry and their roots that are linked together. Just like it was in the days of Antiochus, or later on, in the beginning part of the prophecy in chapter 11. So when you read about the king of the south, you're talking about people who are Edom, and other nations with them, Ishmael and others, and the people of Edom that went into Europe. And, you know, irony there, they're, you know, fighting among themselves. One is in the south, one is in the north. And, of course, the other nations that are with them. So it's a very complex in one way, but on the other hand, you see dominant forces there. And basically, you see Esau there in the south, Esau in the north. Just like you see today, you know, in terms of Israel, there is Israel who is in the north, king of the north, part of the king of the north, in their land, those lands there that will be under the dominion of the rising Jezebel, spiritually speaking, in the future, that God will bring utter destruction on her, which he calls also Babylon, you see, which, as we saw through the prophecies, sometimes it is called Edom, other times it's called Babylon, and all these things are linked, and at the end time, that's in essence what you're going to see. People from the north, and the people from the south, and yet they all come from the same father Isaac, generally speaking, and others come from the same father Abraham. And that's the irony of the whole thing. And so, well, you know, when you have this background, then you go back there, you begin to understand. Then you begin to understand what God is talking about in Isaiah 63. When he comes to execute vengeance and judgment, you see, and his clothes are going to be full of blood, and he uses basically the same terminology that you read in Revelation, and then you understand the link between the two. What is he really talking about? You see? In essence, even though others are involved also, in essence, this is going to be the war that God is going to wage and has been waging all this time, and finally will finish it by putting down Esau and raising up Jacob. Until Esau learns the lesson, there is a remnant of them and those who will come up in the second resurrection, and that he too will be restored to the God of their fathers. And so, this is what happens in between. It's not an end time story and that's it. That's the bottom line and that's the end of the story. No, this is just another phase in it. But what you see in Isaiah 63 and Revelation, chapter 12 or 17, you see in Revelation 12, for example, you all know the story about the woman. You see, the woman that is Israel, and then the saints. And it's not speaking only about the followers of Jesus Christ, but in the ultimate sense, all the children of Israel, who will ultimately all follow Jesus Christ, since he is their king, their God, their future husband. And then on the other hand, you find the false one, you see, the counterfeit one, being a religion and a nation and a people and others with them, fighting that. And basically what you read in both cases, Isaiah 63 or Zechariah 12, you know, all the armies of the nations are coming against Jerusalem, you're basically in essence reading in specific the story of Jacob and Esau, the mastery over the birthright, you know, the desire for the, you know, to have the dominion over the birthright, and God is the one that's going to put an end to this conflict. And that's in essence what Isaiah 63 is all about, or Zechariah 12, or the book of Revelation in terms of the war and the conflicts and the bloodshed and the final results of it. You see, it's in essence a story of these two twin brothers, Jacob and Esau. You know, they had good times sometimes, you know, they live in peace, you know, other times they live at war, but generally the undercurrent of the relationship is this, the mastery for the dominion. Sometimes they're doing it in peace, politically, economically, other times they do it with the edge of the sword, you see. But generally, Jacob at the end rises to the top, and Edom is at the bottom, and so it would be at the end of time also. And so, as I said, you know, you have some good times and bad times between them. And with that in mind, when you read all the prophecies, Obadiah and Isaiah 11, where Israel is going to be taken to captivity, and speaking not only about Judah, in many parts of the Middle East, and you have the names that mention Isaiah 11, it's going to be in Egypt, part of Ishmael, it's going to be in Iraq, it's going to be in Iran, it's going to be in different territories in the area, and beside many other places, obviously, in Europe, other places wherever Jacob is, but there he specifically concentrates on that, and then out of those places God will bring both Judah and Israel, as he mentions there, house of Joseph and the house of Judah, and he's going to tell them, okay, this is your land, now go fight for it. And they will go, as it says, they will go to the west, the Philistines and Lebanon and Egypt and all that, and all going to be under the dominion and Edom and Moab, and they're going to reconquer the land just like in the days of Joshua, and then everybody's going to live in peace once they all come under the dominion of the God of Israel, of the Savior of Israel. And so in essence, in Isaiah 11, you're seeing a repeat of what happened when Israel came out of Egypt and went back to their own land, and God told them, yes, you can have it, but you're going to have to fight for it. And so they will in the future also, as they did in the past. And Edom is going to be in subjection again under his brother, because he hasn't chosen to live in peace with him and accept the will of God, obviously. And so even though now and then they had good relationship, and ironically in the past, which, sometimes we may not think about it, not having a background, proper background of what it is really all about. In the days of, King David, and the part of Edom that was in Lebanon, or in Phoenicia, it was not called Phoenicia, but later on, the right people, land of the right people, but, biblically it's just called Tyre and Sidon, and all those areas there. Israelites and Edomites lived side by side. In other places, they did not live in peace. But in that place, they lived, in peace, and Hiram, the king of Tyre, was a friend, actually, of David. And he, later on, was the one that was instrumental, which is ironic, in the building of the Temple of Solomon. He sent the wood and metal and gold and silver and many other things. And mind you, the Phoenicians were traveling all around the earth. So, they had a lot of expertise and brought a lot of things from all over. And all that ended up in the temple. And you see the alliance there. And so, ironically, Brother Edom was instrumental in the building of the temple of his father, Isaac. The God of his father, Isaac, that is. You see, along with his brother, Jacob. And later on, then we read about King Herod, who was an Edomite. Forcefully, his family converted to Judaism. But he too, he takes the temple of Ezra and makes it a magnificent temple, glorious temple. So here you see again, Brother Esau, Brother Edom, with Jacob, building the temple of their, the God of their fathers, which is very ironic. And so things are going to be turning around the other way again. At the end time, God again, some prophecies in Isaiah and other places. It talks about all the riches that is coming from nearby territories. Part of it is Ishmael, part of it is Edom, and many other places are going to flow into the temple, into Jerusalem. And all of them are going to live in peace. So it's a complex history here of fighting and bickering and bloodshed and hatred and false religions, counterfeit religion. And just like in the days of Christ, there was he was introducing the new, the pure religion there again, and then also to the children of Israel, and then you find the false religion rising up again and confusing the issue and creating again another Babylon there. And so God constantly, from the beginning of time, from the days of Abraham, as he told him, come out of Babylon. And so he tells his children, come out of Babylon. And that Babylon later on, was dominated by Esau, brother Edom. And so anyway, we can go on and on with that, but this is not the intent of the study, that is the overall study, that is the teaching of the law. But now and then, it's good to have a background. And for, taking sort of journeys into the rest of the Bible, into the rest of history and prophecy and other teachings. So, we can have it all together there and gain a greater appreciation, comprehension of the law, which is basically the foundation of it all. This is where it all started, you see. And that's the reason why we go through all that. Well, anyway, I think I'm going to stop with that. You can read with this in mind, Ezekiel 14. And that is, sorry, Ezekiel, Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28. And there you see the type of the antitype of the prince and the king of Babylon and Tyre. And both of them were dominated by Esau and the attitude behind it. You see, the haughtiness, the arrogance, the pride and all that, and how God is going to bring it down. And the spirit that was behind it, and, you know, the brother Esau, unfortunately, that gave himself to it, but also brother Jacob, you know, the brother of Esau, he too went after that. And he, he injected that religion into him, the religion given to him by God, for which reason God always says, come out of Babylon to Jacob. And for that matter, he wants also Edom to come out of Babylon and come back to the religion of his father Isaac. And ultimately, this is what God is going to do. What you read in between, that's all it is, just in between. And some people think that's the end of the story and the bottom line, and it's not. All these things, you know, until the end of the book of Revelation, the things that happen in between, and then the final story. All peoples, all nations, all men are going to be united, reunited again, into the religion that they began with through Adam and Eve, and, you know, the righteous men that were among them, and in specific, you know, but brother Esau and Jacob, they will come back to the religion, the pure religion of their father Isaac and their grandfather Abraham. And all will be the people of God, and the ultimate, in the end of Revelation, is the end of the story. What really counts, you know, what comes in the beginning of chapters of Revelation is just in the in-between. It's not the end of the story, it's just the in-between. The end of the story is the last 2-3 chapters, when all shall be one in God, and God shall be all and in all, in heaven and Jerusalem, that will be on this earth. And that's, in essence, the end story there of the conflict between the two brothers. Anyway, I think we have plenty here. We gave you plenty to think about and research and investigate and, you know, and put all those things together that you have known in the past and have a better understanding of what this story is all about, of Edom and Jacob, and the end results of it. So we're going to go back now to the book of the law again in Genesis 28, and from there we will continue the story. And so as we go back to Genesis 27, actually in 27, we read here that, just for sake of final touches on this little series here about Esau and Jacob, in verse 37, in other words, when Esau is bemoaning the fact that he lost his birthright, Isaac replies to him in verse 37, and Isaac answered and said unto Esau, behold, I have made your, that is, made him, that is Jacob, your Lord. And all his brethren I have given to him for servants. You know, basically speaking about Esau and others. But specific, talking about this conflict, this struggle between the two. One is going to be on top, because that was by decree. But on the other hand, you know, when the people of God, the people of Israel, and the people of Joseph, or the people of Judah, or the other tribes, when they were sinful in the sight of God, God would allow brother Edom, and of course others also, to have the dominion over them. And so he says, this is basically what he tells him here. And you know, we've given you all this information to have a background to this, so you can really comprehend and understand in a greater way, not necessarily in total understanding of it, in fullness of it. Obviously, there is always much information to add to it, but at least in a very amplified manner, the meaning of the statements that you are reading here. And that's how the study of the law is all about. You know, you begin to dig very deeply into it. You have a context, you have background, you have research. You put it all together, and the study of the law becomes a magnificent, you know, glorious endeavor. And that's what David would say, oh, how I love I thy law. It is ever with me. That's what he's talking about. It's not just a facade of it that some people read and the thing that is boring. You see? It's a whole world. Every statement, every word that you read, you know, becomes a whole world when you add to it, you know, the background, the context. And so that's what Isaac is saying here. Look, you know, I'm meeting your Lord. He's your boss. And Esau still is pleading for help, you know, for blessing, for something. And so in verse 39, we read what he gives him. And Isaac, his father, answered and said to him, behold, the fat of the places of the earth shall be your dwelling. And then, you know, when you understand Babylon and oil, and also wherever you go to the South Americas, they have oil there also. You know, like Venezuela and many places like that, they even sell much of their oil to the United States, to Jacob, you see. And then all the exploitation that you can go into it, the exploitation that unfortunately that Jacob is inflicting on Edom, and not always in a righteous manner. And that's not right, and God is going to, in essence, exercise punishment, or bring punishment on Jacob because he's abusing his brother, even though he gave him a law. You know, it's a part of the teaching. Don't abhor your brother Esau or Edom. He's your brother, he said. Don't take advantage of him. You know, you're going to be the master, yes, but not the master that is, you know, the kind of master that you have among the Gentiles, you know, but a benevolent master. And Jacob wasn't always that way, unfortunately, and for that reason, he's going to have to pay the penalty for abusing his brother Esau. And I don't need to go into that. Many of us know about it, and if we are engaged in it, you know, we should not. But you should remember, Edom is our brother. Esau is our brother. Spanish people are our brother. You see? They're speaking by the Spaniards, and we should treat them as such. And they likewise should treat, you know, brother Jacob in like manner, and not have any animosity or hatred or whatever it may be.
Anyway.
And anyway, in verse 39 and 40, you can read, you know, the bottom line to everything that we've been discussing so far. Anyway, we're going to stop at this point and continue next time. This is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people.